Alexa Philippou, our women's basketball expert, where is your favorite place in the world to watch your alma mater, Stanford, play ball?
There was a few years, I will say, that I really enjoyed when I actually had a spring break watching March Madness games, like, you know, in Aruba or on a beach or something like that. But I can't say I'm complaining that I'll be able to be in Portland for the regionals and I'll be in stores for the first two rounds. It's something special to be on site for these games. So I think that'll work out well instead of the beach.
The women's bracket is just about set. What storyline are you most looking forward to in the next couple weeks? This is your job and you are very excitable about it. That's why you're here.
For me, this season has been defined a lot by some of the inconsistency or uncertainty outside of South Carolina, of course. How does that translate into March Madness? Does that mean there's a ton of upsets? Does that mean we see one seeds, two seeds fall that we're not expecting? And of course, the ultimate question is, does South Carolina finish the job?
Eight is pretty great, and South Carolina has been fantastic at the SEC tournament. An eighth SEC tournament title.
Do they go undefeated, and do they bring home that third title in seven tournaments? So that's the one side of things. And then I think the other side is the star power in this sport is just so exciting. And people are becoming household names, from Caitlin Clark to Angel Reese to Juju Watkins, Paige Beckers, obviously.
Here comes Clark. How will she go for history?
And I want to see how that star power performs on the big stage. Some of those stars are freshmen. When we talk about Juju, we talk about Hannah Hidalgo.
Juju Watkins at the rim! Adds on to the stellar performance and debut for the number one overall recruit coming in.
So how does that affect them when the lights are the brightest they've been at this point? Do they kind of transcend that moment? And the big overarching point, I've covered the sport full-time now for 5 years, but even just talking to people who've been around the sport longer than me, I don't think there's been this much excitement and anticipation over the Women's March Madness tournament. And to see everyone else buy in, not just the people who've been here for so long, is so exciting. And we're just getting started. So to see how the next 3 weeks unfold, and that all eyes are on the sport in this moment of the sport's growth, I can't wait to see where we are by the end of it.
The madness is back for women's college basketball, and there are more than enough questions to go around in this year's edition of the NCAA tournament. Will South Carolina go undefeated? Who will survive the region of doom, also known as the group of death, if you like World Cup? Will it be about Iowa? How about LSU? And about this mega crop of superstar freshmen, are they ready for this winner-go-home pressure cooker? With so many questions, we called on our resident women's hoops expert, Alexa Philippou, to guide us through all of this joyful chaos. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Thursday, March 21st. This is ESPN Daily. Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Alexa, of course, one storyline that has dominated the season, the South Carolina Gamecocks. They're 32-0. They're undefeated. Last year, they famously fell to Caitlin Clark in Iowa in the tournament. How did Dawn Staley get things back on track this year for another overall one seed?
So I guess you can use your word of choice here. Revamped, retooled, reloaded. I think they all kind of apply. And what's so brilliant about this job that Dawn has done is that you have players who were in smaller roles on the team that now have been entrusted in larger roles and have really just made that transition seamlessly. So we think about players like Raven Johnson, the point guard, Bree Hall, Ashlyn Watkins, and Chloe Kitts down low. And I think that's a testament to the player development at South Carolina, and also the fact that those players, they could have transferred elsewhere, but they had faith. They had a role on that South Carolina team once all those, you know, WNBA picks of last year and Aaliyah Boston and her classmates all left. So there's the player development aspect. Camila Cardoso was part of that. She was playing behind Aaliyah Boston, but now has a larger role too. And then you have other players that came in as transfers or as freshmen. And Malaysia Fulwiley obviously is a star freshman who made her mark the first day of the season against Notre Dame with that crazy layup finish and whatnot.
My goodness, a show-stopping highlight. You're going to see that one all season.
But Tahina Pau-Pau has been probably the most impactful transfer in the country, you could argue. And her having this sort of season for South Carolina has been huge.
Pau-Pau at the buzzer, knocks in a three.
She's been one of the major factors, obviously not the only one, for them becoming the third best three-point shooting team in the nation in terms of three-point field goal percentage. And that was a huge difference. They're shooting 39.7% from three this season, again, third in the nation. Last year, that number was 31%, which was in the 53rd percentile. So you have that same identity in some ways, but they're even more diversified offensively, and it's really a true testament of picking your poison.
If you're the type of listener that's just now joining the women's college basketball season, first of all, welcome. But the name Camila Cardoso, whom Alexa mentioned, she's the one who hit that wacky three off the glass to beat Tennessee.
Camila, three-pointer for the win. Bang! Gamecocks win! Camila Cardoso, a three-pointer at the buzzer. And the Gamecocks storm the floor.
And if you want even more on that, well, her family was in front of her for the first time seeing her play, and it was one of the most incredible stories of the entire college basketball season, men or women's. But that said, speaking of Iowa and their path back to the Final Four, they're in the group called the so-called Albany 2 bracket, but I know you have another name for it. When this came out, my World Cup friends were texting me with a very familiar term. Do you care to explain that one?
Yeah, I think whether or not you want to call it the region of doom, the region of death, I think either apply. Before the bracket came out, if you asked people their Final Four picks, I think a good amount of people would have said, I could see LSU making it, I could see UCLA making it, and I could see Iowa advancing. But instead of having those three in different regions, the committee decided to put them all in this Albany 2 region. And I don't quite understand why. And to me, the fact that at best, only Caitlin Clark or Angel Reese, or maybe neither of them, get to the Final Four is blowing my mind. So I know Rebecca Lobo said it the day of the bracket reveal, but Iowa, as the one seed, was supposed to earn the second easiest path to the Final Four because they were the second overall seed, but they definitely got the toughest region. And I think even their second round game is tough because they're going to face either Princeton or West Virginia, and those are two really tough defensive teams. On the other part of the bracket, you have LSU meeting a UCLA team. Again, this could be a Final Four matchup, and now it's a potential Sweet 16 one. You have an LSU-Iowa potential rematch in the Elite Eight. That was obviously the national title game last year. My brain is exploding, if you can't tell. I will not be in Albany. I will be in Portland for the regional round, but holy cow, this is just a gauntlet. Whoever comes out of this, you know, still standing will definitely have earned it.
You mentioned LSU. Of course, they are the defending champs. They brought back a lot of talent. They had some key transfers, but there's an outside argument. This season went off the rails at one point for Kim Mulkey's squad. I mean, how do you see them, I don't want to say recuperating, but how do you see the Tigers getting it together for a potential tournament run?
I guess you could say they've lived many different lives in this one season, it feels like, because you had Angel Reese having an unexplained absence for a stretch in non-conference play. Kateri Poole left the program also around that same time. Samaya Smith, who was a really budding star for that team, another post presence, went down with a knee injury and is out for the year. You had Haley Van Lith trying to find her own. You had Anissa Morrow adjusting, you know, in her own right too. So there's a lot of things that went up and down. They had a huge win over Virginia Tech, and then they lost some games to unranked teams in SEC play. And then they had some really tight games against South Carolina. We saw, obviously, some... I've been calling it a kerfuffle. I don't think it was like a full-on fight, obviously. There was not like a, you know, punches thrown or anything, but we saw some emotions there in that SEC championship game.
And that could be an intentional foul.
Oh, we don't want this.
And quickly, things escalate on both sides, both coaching staffs coming out to try to pull their players away.
But even within the SEC tournament, you had last year Poa, who is, she's been coming off the bench for them a lot of the time, but sometimes she has started. She had a really serious, it looks like a concussion, I think that's what they've been calling it, and had to be taken out on a stretcher. And that was emotional in of itself that happened in the semifinal game. Michaela Williams, who's been a star freshman, she's banged up. She has a foot injury. Angel Reese is dealing with an ankle. So for me, I think LSU's been playing really well down the stretch, but I'm not quite sure where they stand health-wise. Do they have the depth to make a run? Is it going to come back to bite them if they don't? Because they might only, if they're only going six or seven deep, that could be a little tricky, especially in this region.
A couple fun facts. Kim Mulkey, never been to back-to-back Final Fours. And another fun fact, LSU has not beaten South Carolina since 2012, kiddos. That is a long time. You mentioned injuries and how much that plays a factor in any sport, never mind this one. Are there any squads in particular that have been bitten by this bug that you think are probably not necessarily going in on their front foot in terms of the tournament?
This conversation has to start with Elizabeth Kitley. I mean, she's a three-time ACC Player of the Year.
Here we go. Hokies inbound. Go to Kitley.
Yeah! Has not played since suffering what looked like a really serious injury to her knee in the regular season finale against Virginia.
Kitley is down under the basket in some pain. Her family certainly concerned in the stands.
Right now, Virginia Tech said there's a chance that she could play. They haven't ruled her out. It just seems very vague and up in the air. I don't know if many people are expecting her to play this tournament, let alone the first weekend, but that's a team that was playing really its best basketball for the last 6 weeks or so, and they won the ACC regular season title. But without Kitley, they have Georgia Amore, but it's going to be a really tall task ahead for them to try and get back to the Final Four, which was their goal going into the season. And then Notre Dame also has an injury bug. They've had person after person go down with injuries, and the latest one was Kylie Watson, who's one of their posts, with a torn ACL. So Notre Dame's likely down to what's looking like a six-player rotation. And again, it's just at a certain point in a tournament setting, does that depth come back to bite you? Molly Davis for Iowa has not been ruled out. Iowa said it's possible that she comes back. You might remember on senior day, she got hurt and had to get carried off and then came back on basically in a wheelchair for the senior day ceremonies. But she could be sneakily important because she takes some of the pressure off Clark to do everything. And I know she's obviously very beloved as the headband, the Iowa fans call her. The other one I'm looking at, we talked about, obviously, Michaela Williams and last year Poa. But Mackenzie Holmes, She tweaked her knee too at the end of the regular season, and she has had a history of knee injuries. She has said that this one isn't as bad as the one last year that impacted her play, but definitely for Indiana, even though maybe most people wouldn't say, oh yeah, they're a Final Four contender, I have my eye on just how much she's playing, how she looks, and how that impacts the Hoosiers moving forward.
Coming up, we'll take a look at the newer kids on the block. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, Alexa, we've heard about these players all year, the super freshmen. Who do you think is going to be able to best handle the bright lights of March Madness? And I will say off the top, I live in Los Angeles. I've seen her play with my eyeballs. Juju Watkins is my favorite player on this list.
I mean, you read my mind. I was at the Pac-12 tournament, and even though she didn't have a great championship game performance, I think we have to start this conversation with her. She's the sort of player that I feel like she just has that quality to transcend the moment and to show up and make winning plays.
Watkins wants a clear out. Here's 10. Juju with 10. Space to drive for her. Elevates over Wedding. Kisses it home.
Even Lindsey Gottlieb, after the Pac-12 championship game, was stressing that Juju is a winner and she knows how to make the plays to win games. And sometimes that means passing to her teammates or winning it with defense or coming through with big rebounds. So maybe it's because I've seen her the most in person of any of these players. I was, of course, at the 51-point performance.
Juju Watkins, 51, and everybody else on the Trojan team, 16 points. What a night. What an upset. And what an important victory for USC.
I feel like I have to say that, you know, every time I talk about her. Like, maybe my perception's skewed because I saw this most ridiculous performance you could ever imagine happen with my own eyes. And it's interesting. The one thing I'm kind of curious about with that USC team is they had no expectations of being this good, I don't think, going into the season. Now, obviously, they're a one seed. Everyone's talking about Juju in the same breath as Cheryl Miller and Lisa Leslie and all these greats. Everyone's talking about USC being back. I don't know how much if that is adding pressure, especially because they ended up winning the Pac-12, getting that one seed, and now is like the target on their back. Or do they feel like, you know, we're in some ways we're overachieving, so we don't have that pressure. And they don't have a lot of, obviously, experience playing in March and going on deep runs. I really am interested to see if there's a moment where that lack of experience, either collectively or individually, shows itself. But no. If you have the best player on the floor, then that might not matter much, because she might be that good.
Lindsey Gottlieb, of course, head coach of the USC women's basketball team. Who else you got there on that freshman list?
I was going to say, there's plenty more we can really dig into. Hannah Hidalgo, in some ways, I think any other year, she would be the it freshman if maybe Juju wasn't there. Hannah has been incredible for Notre Dame. What she does on both sides of the ball is not something you see very often, let alone from a freshman. And Notre Dame, I think she's fearless, though. That I do know. And I think that fearlessness that we saw when she dropped 31 points on South Carolina in the first game of the season, it made it look like it was nothing.
Hidalgo banks it in. She has been essentially the source of offense for Notre Dame.
That fearlessness could serve her well and Notre Dame well long term.
Can I just say this quickly? Hannah Hidalgo is one of those players, for all of you listening who don't otherwise know, as soon as you get to the court or you see her play, you know who she is. That's the kind of player that she brings to the table. It's like, who was that? And I need to make sure that I follow that person. For those of you wondering, it's not just, and I don't mean to take anything away from anybody else, she doesn't just make every shot she puts up. That's not the kind of game that happens. There's a lot of different things to go on with how she manages to make an impact on the floor. So, yes, I'm a big fan of Hannah Hidalgo as well. Please do carry on.
No, thank you for adding that context. Another player, again, if things were different, if there were fewer really to stand out players, we probably would be talking about Madison Booker more. This is a player that came in as a freshman. She's a forward. Texas's point guard, Rory Harmon, who was a player of the year candidate, tears her ACL at the end of December. And Vic Schaefer goes to her and was like, hey, Maddie, can you play a point guard for us? And she's done it, and she's done it to a really exceptional level, especially given the fact she's, you know, playing out of position. She's a freshman. She's playing in the Big 12. And she ended up winning, or she shared the Big 12 Player of the Year award. And she also led them to the Big 12 tournament title. She has a really silky smooth mid-range jump shot. She wears 35, so there's a lot of KD comparisons there that I know like the Texas fans are eating up. So Texas obviously is a one seed, and it's really remarkable when we think about Juju, Hannah, Maddie, they're leading their teams to either one or two seeds in this tournament, and how far they can lead them from there, we'll have to see. And then of course, Malaysia Fulwiley, she won SEC tournament most outstanding player and the last player to do that as a freshman. Can you guess, Clinton?
I do not know.
Candace Parker.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
That's a huge comparison, but if...
That's a huge comparison, yes.
If Fulwiley, she doesn't have to be Candace Parker, but if she's being efficient, playing good defense, making her shots, bringing just that offensive power that sometimes South Carolina can still get into lulls at times, so she can help kind of cut through that, get to the basket and whatnot, then that can help them a lot as well. So keep an eye on her.
I can't believe we got through this much of the show without actually talking about this team. UConn obviously still around. What are their chances in terms of making a run and how their season has gone? For those of us who probably know that team better than any at this point in terms of the longevity of the quality of their program.
They've had another year that's been marred by injuries. I think they're now up to 6 players out for the year with injuries. But they've persisted throughout that. And we've seen them go undefeated in the Big East. We've seen Paige Beckers come back from her ACL tear in really incredible form. She's putting up ridiculous numbers in terms of efficiency, but also really she plays like the power forward position defensively, and she's coming through with all these steals and blocks. And it's a role that we didn't see her play as much as when she was fully healthy, even her freshman year. So she's playing great. Aaliyah Edwards is playing at an All-American level. They rely a lot on freshmen though. And that's kind of the X factor is, in my mind, are those freshmen going to show up when the lights are bright? But I do wonder too, and this is something I'm really curious as how this plays out. UConn probably doesn't have that much pressure on them, I think, at least not compared to Iowa or LSU or South Carolina. So does that help them? Does no one expect them to make the Final Four, and can they use that to their advantage? And we're talking about UConn here. It's kind of crazy. Do they kind of relish that underdog role? But what I'm interested to see, if chalk holds, they would play Ohio State in the Sweet 16, which is a rematch from last year's Sweet 16, where the Buckeyes beat them. And then they could potentially face Juju and USC in the Elite Eight again, if chalk holds. So those are fascinating matchups to me. I will be, at those Portland games. So if that's how it ends up transpiring, I will be on the edge of my seat.
Last thing I'll ask you, it came up earlier in the show because you are, of course, an alum of Stanford. Player of the year in the Pac-12 went to Cameron Brink. Seeing how it's the last year of the Pac-12, a thing that I just still can't believe that I'm saying out loud, I'm going to ask you to be a homer for a little bit. How will the Cardinal do in this tournament?
I keep going back and forth with them because you have a player like Cameron Brink who is going to be probably the number 2, maybe the number 3 pick in the WNBA draft coming up. And then you have next to her, Kiki Iriafin, who has made this huge jump as a junior. But for me, the question mark is the guards. Are the guards going to come through on both ends, really? Because I saw the guards let Juju Watkins score 51 points on them at Stanford. And then also in the title game of the Pac-12 tournament against USC, they had Elena Bozgana scored 9 points, and then no one else scored more than, I think, 3 or 4. Hannah Jump went 1 for 5 from three. And so they got what they needed for the most part from Kiki and Cam, but their guards weren't consistent. And like, that's, I think, been the biggest X factor for them. In one version of my bracket, I have them going to the Final Four, but in another version of my bracket, I have them losing earlier. That's a team I don't have a super confident sense of. But again, if you have the best player, a lot of times that will be Cam Brink. Can that be enough? But at the same time, they don't have that guard star power that can win you a lot of games in March. So that's my little hesitance there.
Alexa revealing that she is not a sheet of integrity person. Multiple brackets out there, which leads me to the final question. Who you got?
Who I got? Okay, well, we're just exploring the options going into Friday. I think right now, I'm going to get my physical bracket out, but right now I have South Carolina getting out of Albany 1. I have UCLA surviving the region of death, region of doom. I have UConn making it back to the Final Four. And then I do have Stanford, but that's the one I felt least confident about. And if you ask me in an hour, I might pick Texas. I have South Carolina, UCLA meeting in the national title game, and I have South Carolina winning. And it's just because I just think this is the year. It's something special for the Gamecocks. I see there is a scenario in which they get upset, but at a certain point, they're just so deep and they have so many different ways to beat you and they have something to prove. They want to finish what they couldn't finish last year. And so I think this ends up being the year of South Carolina and we tie it with a bow and they go undefeated.
Thank you, Alexa.
Thanks, Clinton. I'll talk to you soon.
Definitely. For more on the NCAA Women's Tournament, tune in to Tourney Run, hosted by Alexa Philippou and Katie Barnes. Available every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow, kiddos.